Hi, my name's Betty. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Betty.
I'm glad to be here, only not really, because I don't like being in relapse. I'm just out of relapse. And hopefully, the getting ready for the convention kind of helped to motivate me when that crazy committee was in my head, like they had up on the stage. That's the truth. So I'll tell my story real quick, I hope. In 2002, I came into the program because I went to a therapist, and after he met with me, he said, well, you're a bitter and resentful woman, and you need to go to OA, but you won't. So I did. And I just to prove him wrong, and it was interesting. I went to a Thursday night big book study, which seemed very odd to me because alcohol was not a problem and they were using the big book. But it didn't matter because I liked the people there. And also, I mean, I'm just saying, I didn't want to go to another program where they took my money and had me weigh in front of everybody and all that kind. I just felt very false at that point. And so I liked, but OA was a very strange program. And But step one, I knew I was utterly, at that time, in 2002, utterly and completely defeated by food, and that my parts of my life were unmanageable. I didn't think it was all unmanageable. Now I know better, but lots of it was unmanageable. So anyway, for 6 months, I fought it really, really, really hard, and then I sort of accepted it, and so I lost 100 pounds. And kept it off for about 7 years, and that was great. And I did, I did intergroup, and I did group, or what, region four and all that. But that just wasn't for me, it just wasn't. But anyway, and then things kind of went downhill about 2012. And I always say a series of unfortunate events. I didn't know there was a book called that. Mm-hmm. I didn't, there's a book called A Series of Unfortunate Events. And I felt God had abandoned me. And so I just, my concept of God just wasn't working anymore. And that was always a really hard thing for me anyway, because I didn't, my whole family's religious, but I'm not. And they love me anyway, which is good for them. They keep thinking I'll change my mind, but I haven't so far. And, but anyway, although I did, and I've told this story before, so some people in the room have heard this, but my mother kind of favored me, I think. I think maybe all of us think that. But so my sister was telling me one time, well, you know, I love you dearly, but you won't get into heaven. Of course, my mother's been dead since 1987. I said, you know what, Joe? That's my sister's name, Joe. If my mother's up there in heaven, I'm getting in. And that's the faith I had in my mother more than anything. And my sponsor had told me to come up with a concept of God as I understood him, and thank God I was, you know, in the big book it says that, and I just think that's genius. Just come up with a God that you can live with. And so mine has changed over time. And I first had one that was, she said, list all the things that you want in a God and then hire that God, you know. And I did, and I said I want it to be everything like, just like my mother, basically. And so that worked for me for a long time, but not when all those series of unfortunate events occurred. And again, just lost my faith. And this is a spiritual program, which I do not like. Just saying, I don't like it. It's hard for me. It's really hard. And maybe this time I'll actually get it. And what I do is I talk to God every day, even though I do not believe. I talk. I say, thank you, God. I said it today probably 7 times. Thank you, God, for this. Thank you, God, for that. Could you help me with this? Not believing it'll happen. Because I'm only abstinent of a little over a month. I'm not going to count days. I think for me, numbers have always been a problem in school or otherwise. I think I have a little bit of dyslexia where you turn numbers around. Like I told you, our room number is 203. It's 230. I realized that after I told, after I texted it to her. So I don't like dealing with numbers. But one of the big, huge things, though, and even though I was in relapse, so from, let's say, 12, 13, 14, 15, so 4 years and going on, and I would have a few days or maybe even weeks, and then I would fall right back in. But now it seems to be somewhat sustained, and I've told this story before. I will give God tests, which isn't fair, but when I was first in OA, I was drinking lots and lots of diet soda. It seemed to help. And when I was going to QT and I had those, you know, those big old plastic cups, and I just toss them in the back. And one day I looked in my car, and I don't know, I don't know how many I had, 15, 20, and it just was ridiculous. In my rational mind, I said, this is ridiculous. So I went to my Thursday night meeting, and I said, okay, God, I am sick of this, and I don't believe you can help me, but please help me, if you could. Help me get rid of this soda thing, just crazy. So I managed to get home and drive by QT. And this is the thing, though. There has never been in this whole entire time that I've been in the program that a lightning bolt hit me, and then everything was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Whatever the food substance was just went away, no. So the next day, I got pretty much through the day before I started thinking a lot about it, but I didn't get one. And 2 days turned into four and so on. So for years I didn't have soda. Then I took it back, but now this was kind of odd. The second time I asked God to help me, it was a lot quicker to get rid of it. And I'm glad. I don't like spending the money, the time, having it in my head. But right now, and I think some of you might know this, I have a particular food item in my head, and it doesn't go away. It's like that committee. And it's like it was a sort of a roar, like the roar of the ocean all the time. And I can, thank God, this is a food that is a specific place. You can't get it all the time and all that sort of thing. And so the other day, I was gonna go get it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I just was. And, you know, and I don't wanna beat up on myself. I know we're self-centered and selfish and all that kind of stuff, but I don't think that helps me. That doesn't do me any good. I mean, I don't need those ugly voices in my head. But I was pretty strong-willed about going to get this. And so I ran my errands, and I got to the place, and it was closed. So I think that was a God thing. And I had kind of prayed to God. I had said, could you think of something? And so I don't like to think that that's maybe the truth, but if whatever works. And what I've noticed, and my sponsor told me this one time, she said, sometimes step back and observe yourself. Observe you, how you interact with people, how you deal with food, how you think about food. Like in the restaurant tonight, I was eating with friends, and I realized that for a great deal of the time, I was pretty much focused on the food and not them. And I'd rather be focused more on them than the food. And so what was I gonna say? Anyway, it's still there, but it's more, instead of the ocean, it's like a whisper. And then sometimes I'd have to lean into it to hear. But I mean, it's there. It's just there. And I'm hoping that in, you know, maybe a couple more weeks, it won't be there as much. And the other thing I did was what they suggest as I came out of relapse was I called friends. I texted friends. I read. I didn't write much, but I did write some. And writing has been a big relief when I do it. I think even at my age, I think I want to die not really knowing who I am. You know, they say, this poet said, or whatever, philosopher said, know thyself. I don't really want to know myself. I mean, I don't. So, I mean, I've lasted this long without it. So. But anyway, but the self-examination in the program has helped. It's been painful, but it's been good, too. So, I don't know. How long have I been talking? Maybe 10 minutes? How many? Only 8 minutes? Okay, let's see what else. Well, so what made me come out of relapse? Because I'd get a day or two. I'm just saying a day or two. I can't dive in like 8 meetings a week. I just can't do that. But started going to more, 2 meetings a week, 2 OA meetings a week, where normally I would have one. And then I also am going to, I'm not supposed to say, but another 12-step program that kind of goes hand in hand with this program. And that has helped me a lot. And also, I remember one time I called my sponsor and I said, oh, I just want to eat this thing. And that's hard to do. So I haven't done it that many times, maybe a handful of times. But I called him. I said, I just really am just craving. And she asked me what I'd eaten. And you know, there was no physiological reason to want to eat. And so she said, where are you? And I said, I'm in the kitchen. And she said, well, get out of the kitchen. And you know, do I not know that? Yes. But for that insane moment, those insane moments, I thought, well, why not hang out in the kitchen? Mm-hmm. Nope. So I went to the bedroom. You know, she said, you might want to consider you're tired and you might want to go to bed. So that's what I did do. So anyway, and then, so this is not, I don't want to die non-abstinent, if that makes any kind of sense. I would like to get the abstinence back. And I know, and I don't really like talking about this too much either, but I mean, it's just a fact of life that I've had, you know, problems. I've had a knee replacement, and I have difficulty walking now, and not a whole lot, but certainly I was, you know, I would be better. How could it not be better? And I know one thing I was going to say is about the scale. I still only get on the scale when I go to the doctor. And I did go to the doctor recently, and my weight was down a little. But the best thing was, it's amazing, is my blood pressure's down, which is great, because I was right on the edge of having blood pressure medicine. And that's all a thing about math, body mass, age, all that stuff, salt. And, you know, again, I don't want to beat up on myself, but I want to go, you know, I'm going on vacation with my sister, my beloved sister, and we're going on to Europe together. And, you know, I want to be as fit as I can be when I go. So, but yet that's not enough. It's not ever been enough. I can't think of any reason, my daughter's wedding or anything, that will keep me out of the food for very long. The only thing that keeps me out of the food, and this is the truth, is doing the steps. So I say step 1, 2, and 3 in the morning. Just say it. How long does that take? Less than a minute. I'm powerless over food. I think you're out there. Will you please help me? And with those kind of things, life seems better. And so I'm just hoping that when I see you all at convention next year, I can say I've been abstinent a year. Let's go. A year and a month. Okay, and the only reason I could speak is you have to have a month, and so I have a little over that. So I'm not real strong in my abstinence, but I'm certainly better. You know, I'm better than I was a month ago. Think of, I mean, my head is not as crazy. My body is not as whatever. You know, the food choices are better. My mind is more still. So with that, I'll pass to Miss Cindy.
Thank you, Betty. Hi, my name is Cindy, and I am a compulsive overeater. And I have been in program since 1990, and that's what, almost 27 years or something. Gosh, and it has changed my life. I grew up in a whole house. I'm number 5 of 6 kids. And so all of my family are compulsive overeaters. I think back a couple of generations, it was compulsive alcoholism and gambling. And my grandfather got religion, and Southern Baptists are not alcoholics. We are compulsive overeaters, and that's what I was raised to be. You know, that somehow that sin doesn't count with this other sin that's, never mind. At any rate, so I grew up really heavy, and I was 223 pounds in 7th grade, which I remember because I had to weigh in front of my whole PE class, and it was announced to my whole PE class that's what I weighed, and I think that those of us who carry like 200 plus pounds of extra weight on us, there are issues that we deal with that unless you've walked in those shoes, you just don't know. You just don't know. And part of it is not even, it's not negative. There's a lot of having the weight on me that makes it where the world doesn't expect as much of me. And so I could be a Broadway musical star, but they don't hire 350-pound women to be Anna and the King and I or whatever. And so if I was 120 pounds, it might be that I'm not talented enough. And it might be that I don't have what it takes to be who I want to be. So there's a protection that the weight has that's really hard to deal with. And it's part of what I've dealt with massive weight losses and massive weight gains in program. And I reached my highest weight of 377 pounds. You can pass around this book if you want, whatever. And you'll notice in that book that the final pictures in that book are smaller than I am now. And I had gotten down to a certain weight, and it got really scary when I was at that weight, and I don't know what else, but I started putting on 5 pounds and then 5 more pounds or whatever. And so now I'm working on getting a better food plan. But my definition of my abstinence is it has to be, if I'm trying, I'm abstinent still. If I'm still in program and I'm, because if I start counting days and I start saying, if I eat one extra green bean or whatever it is, I've blown it. Then in my past, for the first 17 years I was in program, I would do well, and it would be black and white, and I was either perfect or I was not. And if I was not, I might as well binge until Monday, or I might as well binge until Easter, or I might as well binge until Christmas, or whatever. So what works for me is that today's food is today's food. Yesterday's food, I can't do a damn thing about whatever happened with yesterday's food. Beating myself up about whatever happened with yesterday's food is not going to help. It's not going to do anything except discourage me from keeping on this path. And this is the first time ever that I've been able to stay. I would get down to about where I'm at now, a little higher, a little lower, whatever, and life would get terrifying. And I would be there for 1 or 2 days, and I would start putting back on the weight, and I would be back up to my top weight. And then I'd work again and try to get down, and I'd get to about this point, and it would get terrifying, and I'd go back up. And so in 2008, I had been out with my nephew, who was 5 at the time, and we had spent the day out in the hot sun, and we had spent the day playing at the beach, and my heart went into atrial fibrillation that night, and I felt a surge in my chest. I felt my pulse, and it was irregular. And my brother, who was a monitor tech, he said, "Oh yeah, you're an atrial fib. I can take you to the hospital if you want." I'm like, yeah, I think let's go to the hospital if there's something wrong with my heart. So I had made the decision that I would have gastric bypass surgery, because I was thinking, what is going to happen if I die and I'm in the car alone with Seth, a 5-year-old nephew? You're 377 pounds, what are you going to do? So I lost the first 130 pounds or so, and I stayed at that weight, which is actually close to the weight that I'm at now. I stayed at that weight, and then I got another scare where they had to stop my heart and start it again to get it back in a normal sinus rhythm. And so I really started working my program, and I lost another 80 or so pounds, and well, the math doesn't work out, but 40 or so pounds or something like that. Anyway, so my weight, yeah, about 40 pounds. So at any rate, I have never, relapse is not a good word for me. When I say I'm in relapse, for me, that word is just an excuse to give up. But if I'm bad enough, and I'm 25 years without ever having sugar. My first sponsor, I started writing her my food every day. She's in this room. I started writing her my food every day. And I wasn't planning. I was not planning on giving up sugar. I was not. But I didn't want to write it down and send it to her. So I had been doing it about a month, and I realized I haven't eaten any sugar. This is bizarre. And that was 25 years ago. One day at a time, I don't care how bad the relapses have been, I don't care how bad the weight has been, at no point did I say, screw it, I'm gonna eat those M&Ms. Not one M&M for 25 years. So my abstinence is that if I continue to do that, and there's other things I don't do chips, I don't do caffeine, I don't do deep fried stuff. If I don't cross those lines, I'm abstinent. And I have to believe that that's good enough. And so I am really grateful recently because I've gotten a new sponsor, and she's in California, and I've been sending her my food by mail for a while, and I didn't do it. And then I thought, well, screw it, I'm not gonna do that. I failed at that. And then I thought, no, you didn't. Let's think of something else. So then I was texting her my food every day, and my food is getting better all the time. There's something about responsibility, committing to somebody else. And my sponsor does not say one word, and her policy is not to say one word about my food. She will not evaluate my food, period. It's her policy. She also does a 10th step, which I thought was pretty cool, A-E-I-O-U. So A is abstinence, and so you talk about how your program's going. What is it, how many meetings did you go to today? Did you talk to your sponsor today? Anything about program, abstinence. E is energy. Did I exercise today? What did I do? What did I spend my energy on doing today? I is I. So how did I treat myself today? Was there any problems with the way I treated myself? O is others. How did I interact with others? Were there any issues? Were there any problems? Was I especially kind to anybody? I often put down, I did a great job at work. I sat with a 90-year-old lady, and she loves me, and I love her, and I can usually put her on the list. Sometimes I can put some of you guys on the list. You know, I can probably put I could put that I spoke at this meeting, you know, and I went to the convention even though I didn't really feel like it or whatever, you know. And so you is what today was uncovered or what today was uncomfortable. So that's a really simple way to do a 10th step that I find really easy. And then she has me write top 10 gratitude list. And her rule is that yesterday's list cannot match today's list. Nothing on yesterday's list can be on today's list. You have to think of something else besides what was on. You can't just say, my kids, my family, my blah, 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 blah. It cannot be wrote like that. So these things are changing my life. And I want to tell one story about is somebody timing me?
I'm just looking.
Okay.
Because we're supposed to open for sharing at some point. And then will we do that or do that?
Yeah, we can do this. First,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'll just tell one really quick story. I have never been somebody who sews. And I have been, every time I start to sew, I go into a shame spiral. And shame becomes, the whole time I'm saying, you cannot do this, you're so terrible at this, you're gonna mess up, no matter what. And of course, what do? I mess up, and I make a stupid mistake or whatever. And so the whole time that I'm doing this, and so I found out about this new place And I went there, and that's gone. That's what recovery is for me. The shaming messages, and we can pass these around. The shaming messages are gone. I need one. Some of them screwed up, so good luck if you come across one. See if you can find one that has both sides of it like that. Anyway, so now I'm doing these things, and they are beautiful, and they are so fabulous, and I just like, you are a creative genius. That's what you are. And this is what recovery looks like to me. And as soon as I let shame have a voice in my head, that's when relapse is knocking at the door. And I cannot come back with you're not good enough, you know. So anyway, I wrote a song, and I don't know if you want to sing along or if you want to just hear me sing it or whatever, but I wrote the words for it for you guys. And this kind of sums up why I go into relapse and how to get out of relapse. So it goes,
what's the tune?
It's the Do You Hear What I Hear?
Oh, okay.
Said my mother to this little lamb, do you hear what I say? You're never good enough, little lamb. Do you hear what I say? The shame, the blame, you're a black spot on our name. You're fat and you'll always be the same. You're fat and you're the only one to blame. Do, 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 said the little lamb to her sponsor. Did you hear what I heard when you were a kid, dear sponsor? Did you hear what I heard? I did, she said. I wish that I was dead, but I found recovery instead. Now my soul is really being fed. Do, 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 said the little lamb to her sponsee. Do you know what I know? Your higher power loves you, dear sponsee. Do you know what I know? You're a beautiful child whose heart is made of gold. Don't believe the lies that you were told. Let his feet in his arms enfold. Do, do, do. Said her HP to the little lamb. Listen to what I say. Oh, my precious child, my little lamb. Listen to what I say. I love you, child. You always make me smile. You can live in recovery. You can be happy, joyous, and free.
That's really good.
So anyway, that's I don't know, recovery is an option. That's what I have to remind myself every day. And being out of relapse is an option. And that's what I have to remind myself every day. So, thanks.
Thank you,
thanks,
Cindy.
Thanks.
I want to add something. What's sustained me from week to week is hearing something in a meeting that will carry me over for a few days. And there was somebody, and again, it wasn't rocket science. He said, you know, food is for fuel. It's not for fun, not for entertainment, not to make me not sad and all that. And you know, it just, I thought about that a lot. And so that's just one thing. You know, if I go to a meeting, I hear one thing that can help me, I appreciate it. So now we're open for you guys to share. So feel free.
I'm Sharon, Puzzle Reader.
Hi, Sharon.
It's been a great night so far. I really enjoyed the opening, and this meeting was very good. I, you know, had been abstinent for quite some time, and I can go for maybe about 2 weeks and then I overeat. And that's kind of where I'm at right now, so I thought I'd drag myself in here and, you know, with all you good folks. And I liked what I heard tonight was, you know, you got to be willing to put in the time. I go to one meeting a week, so that's what I'm getting. And I might just up that to two. So thanks.
Thanks, Sharon. Glad you're here.
My name's Mia.
Hi, Mia.
Hi, Mia.
And a recovering alcoholic for 28 years.
Yay.
And an ex-smoker. And this is my last battle with addiction. I had also had problems with drugs. So I'm very happy that I've gotten rid of those addictions. But I'm an addict, and I know it. And food has been such a problem for me since I was a little girl. I've had trouble with it. I had a very different kind of childhood. I came from a very well-educated family, so I always felt like I wasn't as good as they were, because they all had classic educations. And, you know, I always felt like, well, it's all been done before. What's left? You know, I mean, there were concert pianists, actresses, a chaplain, a doctor. My father was a dental surgeon. And my sister was 10 years younger than I, so she was beautiful. She was tall and thin and never had a weight problem. So I was the short, fat kid, and it was hard getting over that. And I was bullied in school, so I began to struggle with food. And so much as I got older, I started using drugs to lose weight. Then I became anorexic, and I got down to like 87 pounds when I was 17, and I got really scared because I thought, oh my gosh, I've gone too far. What am I going to do? I can't stand to eat anything, because I wanted to be thin and accepted at school. You know, when you're a teenager, you don't want to be a wallflower, and that's what my grandfather used to say I was going to be if I kept, you know, being fat. And they would praise my sister for being so beautiful and so thin and perfect. And she was. I loved my sister. But it really kind of hurt when they would say things like that to me about being a wallflower. You know, I mean, that doesn't give you much motivation to change. You just kind of sit there and think, okay, I'm going to be a wallflower. You know, because I was rebellious and angry. I played my So my whole family died, and I had to raise my little sister, and I had a lot of anxiety because I didn't really know how to raise a kid. You know, she was a teenager and I was just in my early 20s, and so I ate for my anxiety. And then I had so much trouble with her that she ended up having to go into a juvenile home because I couldn't control it. She was out of control. And then I got married and my weight got even worse. I just felt like I needed somebody to help me with my sister. And then I became bullying. I had a sister-in-law that said, hey, you know, you can get your weight down, just throw your food up after you eat it. And we thought it was funny. We thought, hey, this is an easy gig. Eat all you want and then get rid of it. Well, no, that is so bad for you. And I quickly found out that I didn't ever want to do that again, even though I lost a lot of weight when I was hanging around with her. I'm just so grateful now that I've been able to come to OA and listen to everyone here and the things they've been through and how they're dealing with their ups and downs, because I've tried every program to lose weight that I know of on earth. I mean, everything. And nothing worked for me. So I have a 65-pound loss that I've managed to maintain for 3 years now. I was starting an exercise program and a plant plan of eating is kind of, you know, every so often I really fall down. So it's a long struggle with the weight. And that's all I have. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Mia. Glad you're here.
Oh, I'd like to jump in once more and say the exercise is so important. It increases your endorphins, and I don't care if you just walk around the block. If you can just do 15 minutes of exercise once a day, it's amazing the difference it makes. I mean, that's not much to have to invest. And then you get an impetus to go ahead, well, I'll do another 15 in the afternoon. That's a half an hour, and then you build from there. And I've managed to incorporate that in my life, and it really helps me with my depression, which comes along with being overweight. So
thanks, Mia.
Thanks, Mia. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks, Mia.
Hi, I'm Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Thank you, Betty and Cindy, for your shares tonight, and I love the song. Relapse is tricky. I've been in relapse. And what relapse says to me, and maybe this is a limited view, an uninformed view, is I'm using. That's what relapse says to me. So relapse doesn't say, but I'm also not working the steps. I'm also not calling my sponsor. I'm also not doing the things that have helped me stay in recovery. Relapse means I'm using. And there's a correlation, I think, between those things. It's real hard to call your sponsor and tell the truth. Why would you call your sponsor to lie? Not that I haven't done that. Or lie by omission. But it's so tricky because I can also be in a really bad place and have a clean food plan. And we don't call that relapse. I can be not working the steps, not letting go, becoming willing to let go of my character defects, not being careful that if my defects rear their ugly heads and I wrong someone or take a wrong action, that I'm accountable for that. Make amends. I can just be skipping all that and be eating as clean as pie, and we don't call that relapse. But to me, that's batshit crazy, because I did that for 60 years before I came to this program and lost 120 pounds, you know, 80 pounds here, all of that. But it looked real good on paper, or it looked real good on a scale, or wherever. And so I think that sometimes when we're using, and I think, Cindy, you alluded to this in particular, you can still be working very hard on trying to find recovery, to find the program, to continue to make meaning out of the program, to learn and grow spiritually. And I think that that's so important, because if we, as you said, or I think maybe both of you said, that, you know, that black and white thinking, oh, I did this, I might as well, I think I'll just eat until October now.
Mm-hmm.
And then not work a program, you know, because they're separate, they're interconnected, but they are separate. Because there are times when, like I said, I've had very clean food in my life, and I've not been in anything like what a person would describe as recovery at all. And so I'm sorry sometimes that there isn't a word for relapse, that, yeah, my food is clean, but my program is really messy. Because that messy program then I think leads to losing the food from it too. I heard a saying when I first came into program, and if you focus on the program, you'll lose the weight. If you focus on your weight, you will lose your program.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that with all my heart. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. Glad you're
Thanks,
here.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you. I've had people sit over here.
Hi, Pat.
It's really good to be here. It's nice that it's really close. I really appreciate that. I've been in this program since 2006. I was absent. It took me a year and a half, 2007. And then I relapsed last fall, and I'm getting back think what a couple things I have found helpful is that if I start making excuses, I'm in trouble. This is okay, that's all right. If I'm making excuses, I'm in trouble. I think something else that helped me is, let's just say one person has, say, 100 pounds to lose. The first 40 comes off, it's great. 40 pounds, it's great. But the issues and the problems that were related to losing that 40 pounds, the next 20 pounds is completely different. And then the next 20 pounds, and then the last 10 pounds are completely different. That's what I have found the hard way. And that for me, this is a progressive disease. I'm either rolling in one direction with this, I'm rolling backwards. And I don't, and at least for me last fall, I don't think that I realized that I was rolling backwards. I was starting to get bored with going to meetings. I was getting bored with having to do a lot of different things. I was pulling away from my husband in really subtle ways, and he's a great guy. I mean, I doubt that he even knew that I was, but I was just kind of pulling away from not talking to him much. I might sleep upstairs, but it was really hot because we don't use air much. And it was hot, you know, but I knew there was something else going on. And I finally, the bottom line is, I think I finally realized that I was still very hurt and angry about some stuff that had happened in our marriage, and I had not gotten over it really. And it was not about him, it was about me, but I hadn't really gotten over it. And then I think also in the middle of that, that I've been off sugar for a very long time. I have not gotten back on sugar at all. But what I realized later is that salt is really a problem for me. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was just causing me tension. You know, do I eat that or do I not? Do I take the low salt? Do I take the high salt? Do I eat it? Then I thought, you know, that just doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel good. So I talked to my sponsor and I said, I'm just going to stop the added salt. I'm just going to stop it. It's just added salt, that's it. Which meant the popcorn that I have, the popcorn's fine, but no salt on it. And it's been okay. And, you know, those pretzels that have those humongous pieces of salt on it, just don't do that. And then the bags of stuff that my husband would buy and leave on the thing, and, you know, I just don't. And you know what I found out? I remember when I let go of the sugar, it was hell. But then when I did this back and forth, it was hard. I could not sleep at night, not even the sugar. I was thinking about I had done that for years. The stuff was downstairs on the refrigerator screaming. And I'm thinking, don't go downstairs. And the thing that stopped is how many nights, it was like withdrawal, two or three nights of staying awake, thinking about the food, salty food downstairs that was screaming at me. And I said, how many times do I want to go through this? How much more sleep do I want to lose? So one night I'm sitting on the couch and thinking I'm not getting up. And for some reason, that was like a week ago, I just didn't go anymore. And they have pizza every week at work, and that to me is like Salt City. Don't want that. And so I find myself to be calmer. But even before that, with my husband, with these issues that caused us great, great heartbreak, and we will never get it back, that we talked about it. We went on a trip down to Arkansas, Northwest Corner, beautiful, by the way. And we just hiked and talked about stuff that we hadn't talked about for years, things that had hurt, things that bothered us. And then I made the decision to stop leaning away from my marriage, but to lean into my marriage, whatever that meant. He goes for a ride, I'll ride with him. I'll sleep in the same bed. I will make a point to have dinner with him. And I know that sounds like a small thing, but I don't think I really realized that I was progressively. I was actually even going to church. I said, great church, wonderful church. But I'm thinking, why am I not going with him? Where is this taking me? And I guess that was my ultimate thing. Where is this taking me? Where is that all going? Nowhere. And I'm just telling you that when I went back to church, husband, the food, then all the pieces started falling together, and it felt right, and it felt good, and the program started coming alive again for me. So I'm incredibly grateful. I feel
Thanks, Pat. Glad you're here.
So we need to close.
On the back of your sheet is the Serenity Prayer, and this, when I did this meeting on Friday nights at 11 o'clock, it's a phone meeting, and we open with this version of the Serenity Prayer that she wrote. So we're going to sing this. It goes, God grant me the serenity to accept things I can't change. Grant me the courage to change some things and the wisdom to know the difference. God, grant me the serenity, acceptance and courage to change. For it's thy will, not mine, be done. That's the O, A, way, 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 way.
Very cute.
Okay.
Oh, we did not get one of those? Okay. Did somebody else? All right. Are we going to stay here or go?
I'm going to stay.
This is lies we tell ourselves.
Yeah, I have to do my 11 o'clock meeting, but this is at 10, so I'm good.
This is the meeting for the lies we tell ourselves. Yeah, I'm going to stay here too.
Yeah, me too.
So nobody's moving?
That makes it easy,
if somebody else comes in, they could just...
Well, somebody else is going to leave it.
They just have to...
I am the speaker, but I don't know if there's another speaker.
Oh, I don't know. I think this was just a fluke.
Just are a fluke. Ella, I'm going to see her.
A flake or a fluke?
On Tuesday, on Wednesday.
Do you want... She was right. We're probably the speakers are supposed to be up there, but I like it like this.
For a small group, I think that's good.
I do too.
I'm going to see her... In
well, where is she?
Like 5 days.
Okay.
D.C.
Oh,
Washington, D.C.
What's your daddy do and her mommy do?
Her mom's a lawyer for the Labor Relations Board, and her dad is the bookstore manager for the Martin Luther King Memorial.
Okay. Here's the session format. I didn't even see it till now.
It came in the middle of your...
Oh, okay. I wouldn't even have it.
Oh.
I don't want to start
the
thing, but... It's launching. I don't know.
It's kind of...
It is.
I think it's a bigger
deal,
Like this.
Yeah, when it was really...
I can just go ahead and do it. You know, when I wrote things like, you know, these are my excuses. I'm lazy.
I'm glad we're doing better. I mean, that was great. It was a great meeting, but I mean...
I'm glad. Yeah, I think so. Oh, wait. I guess I should stop recording on my phone, huh?
I'm not doing it. I'll see if I can figure it out.
But then you have to get it to come.